on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question during that time, you may press star followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. Thank you. I would now like to turn the call over to Jay Olson.
Thank you, Stephanie. Good morning, everyone. I'm Jay Olson. I'm joined here by my colleague, Sylvan Turcan. We are biotech analysts at Oppenheimer, and we want to welcome everyone to our expert call on Alzheimer's and key takeaways from AAIC. It's a great pleasure to introduce Dr. Marwan Sabbagh from the Cleveland Clinic and Dr. Martin Barlow from Indiana University. Thank you both so much for joining us. In such close proximity to the AAIC, we appreciate your making time to chat with us today. And before we start, I just want to be clear to everyone that we will not be discussing any non-public information today. So just to get things started, we're curious about the general mood coming out of AAIC. What is the sentiment amongst the Alzheimer's research community, especially in the wake of aducanumab failing? Perhaps Dr. Sabbagh, could you please get us started with that question?
Yes, so thank you for including me today. I wanted to first comment that one thing that is clearly casting a shadow beyond the monoclonals, and there are two still in the class that are moving forward, is that another BACE inhibitor from Novartis went down in the generation study. So that's been a huge setback for the field, because I think BACE, except for one left, is pretty close to being just not moving forward as a class of drugs. There's only one left, and we'll discuss that further. The surprise to me is that lifestyle interventions are handily now beating drug interventions. I don't think anybody would have predicted that 5 years ago. Biomarkers are really moving forward. I think we're pretty close, closer than we have been on having screening tests, blood tests for Alzheimer's dementia in the fairly near future. And that's a very actively competitive area. And the last thing is that we're starting to see smaller wins move forward in drug development, particularly around targeting symptoms. So a lot of things. And then, of course, gender-specific research is emerging as well.
Yes, I will say in terms of the general mood, I think it's not so much from the conference itself. It's that the Novartis announcement of their beta secretase inhibitor in the Generation 1 and Generation 2 studies was indeed interrupted, it was halted. And there's some indication that patients who were taking the drug actually, it wasn't just a failure to potentially meet the criteria showing efficacy, but some indication that patients at least temporarily were negatively affected by these drugs that led to, and we're talking about very small differences, but regardless, it's not the direction that they had hoped to see, and those studies were halted. The aducanumab, I think, is part of this march, but the field initially started off with testing the monoclonal antibodies and then the beta secretase inhibitors in mild to moderate stage disease, and with some high profile failures in that stage of the disease, I think most investigators and the leading lights in the field came to the conclusion that perhaps this is too late a stage to be treating the disease, and we began a march to earlier stages, initially mild cognitive impairment, and then there has been a push toward very large primary prevention studies where there may be biomarker evidence of Alzheimer's disease, the cognition or genetic evidence of a high risk of Alzheimer's disease, their patients are cognitively normal. So I think what the Novartis study is in the primary prevention area with in terms of beta secretase inhibitors is a strong or a relatively strong caution flag that what was thought to be true, at least with regard to beta secretase inhibitors, may not be true. And so it does raise some concerns about the amyloid hypothesis in general. But as Marlon said, there are two monoclonal antibodies still in the active study, two shots on goal, as it were. There is a beta secretase inhibitor that is still out there being studied, but there are certainly concerns. I think many people in the field, even I won't say most, but many still believe strongly in the amyloid hypothesis. But I think there is recognition that between potential off-target effects of these drugs and the possibility that that amyloid is maybe produced for a reason early on for the disease process or the process itself is causing deleterious symptoms or changes in cognition, there may be some positive actions also that we don't fully understand. And so I think there is going to need to be a further work to development work, as it were, to a deeper understanding with regard to these drugs.
Great, thank you for that. I want to follow up on a comment you made about many researchers still potentially believing the amyloid hypothesis, or maybe most of them. So I guess in your view, has the amyloid hypothesis not been definitively disproven at this point?
I would say it's not been definitively disproven. There's a tremendous amount of evidence that amyloid plays a role in the or is a necessary factor, as it were, in the onset of Alzheimer's disease, in the onset of the process. But as you know, the illness progresses, it goes through a number of stages, and the importance of amyloid as you go through these stages may not be as great, or we don't fully understand what we're hitting in terms of components of what amyloid is doing that's positive versus negative as you get into the later stages of the illness.
Okay, great. Dr. Savah, other views?
Yeah, a couple. You know, I look at Alzheimer's as a biphasic disease, the amyloid-driven pre-symptomatic phase, and then the tangled tau symptomatic phase. So the questions that continue to be raised are we targeting amyloid too late? Hence this whole push toward pre-symptomatic studies like Generations, like A4, like Early. Second is that in terms of clearance, I think production type approaches are really, really struggling, meaning base inhibitors, gamma secretase modulators, gamma secretase inhibitors. So production-based approaches largely have not resulted in anything that we can put our hand on. There is only one base inhibitor left in the class. But before we throw away the amyloid approach, the two 2 clearance approach is the gantenerumab and BAN2401, you know, people are starting to say maybe we're not looking at the right species or targeting the right species of amyloid, and that, you know, you have to be much more selective, because at the end of the day, each monoclonal targets a different species, different domain, N-terminus, C-terminus, mid-domain, and the two that are left, one is targeting oligomeric, and the other is targeting protofibrillar forms of amyloid, which are both two forms that are considered to be quite toxic to the environment, and so we still might see a monoclonal emerge because these are now targeting very known species that are associated with toxicity. Beyond that, I think amyloid is not having a huge number of successes to hang their hats on, which again, as Dr. Farley puts out, casts shadow or doubt over the amyloid theory.
I will say, in terms of the amyloid studies that have been done previously with regard to the monoclonal antibodies, that there is some suggestion of beneficial effects, but the magnitude of these effects has been, in studies that have been done, too small to reach the level of clinical significance that would warrant regulatory approval and their general use, i.e. solanezumab as an example. Now, I will say solanezumab, as what Marlon was saying, to show where this is going, was originally looked at in mild to moderate stage disease, and it is still under active study in exactly the stage Marwan talked about, the preclinical stage in A4, and those results are not in yet and will not be in for at least another couple of years, I believe.
Okay, great. Before we get into some of these other studies, I just want to follow up on any discussion at AAIC that you and your colleagues may have had about the phase 3 aducanumab study results. I know that Biogen is still collecting and analyzing that data, but it does promise to be one of the most insightful Alzheimer's data sets that we'll have to date. What sort of learnings would you expect to take away from that data, and do you think it will shed any light on approaches to Alzheimer's that could work?
I think from my standpoint, I'm not aware of the. I know the data that they're collecting, and but I don't know what it shows. I mean, I've not been privy to that. It more or less depends on what's there. It could provide some further clues or not. You know, if there are hints of an effect here or there, subpopulations, different levels of disease or different subfeatures or demographic characteristics. But I have no idea about what that data is going to show at this time.
Okay, yeah, and just to be clear, we don't want you to disclose anything that's not...
Well, I have nothing to disclose, and like I say, anything you would, from my standpoint, anything you would say would be pure speculation. But those would be the kind of factors that they're looking at, and they'd be looking for clues. You know, is there a pathway forward with this drug that would be relevant and would have greater potential to show utility for this particular drug.
Okay, great. What about in terms of clinical trial design? Is there an explanation for why the PRIME results were so promising and there was such a disconnect in going to phase 3 with aducanumab?
Yeah. I can do this or you can, Marwan.
Go ahead. Marty, go ahead.
All right. I would say I think a lot of emphasis was put, perhaps over-optimism on the initial results, because the numbers of patients involved were small, particularly at any given dose. The results that were focused on were assessments that were positive. There were other assessments that were done that did not show clinical differences. And so I think it was, you know, certainly there was considerable evidence of a signal that was certainly worthy of being pursued. But I think enthusiasm was perhaps a little bit overblown, and you know, it's small numbers of patients in phase one trials can suggest, but they don't really prove whether, with regard to efficacy, a drug is going to work or not.
And then maybe if I could ask you, because BAN2401 does seem to have a similar binding profile, and you spoke earlier about binding to different species, could you comment on any read across from aducanumab to BAN2401 based on what you've seen from publicly available data for BAN2401? Maybe Dr. Shabab, we could start with you.
I mean, BAN2401 has only shown the data that they've shown for their phase two program, and the signal's quite robust. I think the one thing that BAN2401 has as part of this is that their data, they're very, the phase two study was huge. It was 840 patients. I think it was a very well-designed study with lots of power. I think they did the correct estimate of the dose finding. I think that they showed a signal that was concordant between the amyloid clearance and the cognitive slowing of decline. So I think that ultimately, it was a more informative study than the PRIME study was. I feel like, you know, they come out ready to do their phase three study with the 10 milligrams twice monthly. It's based on very, very pretty good data. I don't know what else I have to say, but I thought that their design is really, it's very informative.
I would agree. I think it's the signal's good. It's worthy of being followed up. A couple caveats. One is they actually it's a technically negative study, because they're originally designated, I think their primary outcome was for 12 months was a not Marwan. And the 12-month, they just missed significance at that time point, but then they carried the study on out to 18 months, and the curves continued to diverge, and the drug appeared to be clearly significant. The other caveat is the assignment of patients was not totally random. I believe the European regulatory authorities were concerned about giving the dose they were giving to homozygous E4 patients. And after the study had been underway for some period of time, after that point, those E4 patients were assigned to, the lower dose group and the placebo group, but not to the high dose group.
Yeah, actually, I think the greatest criticism is not the Bayesian design, but the fact that they were their own enemy. I think, you know, they put these, what I consider to be unrealistic pre-specified targets, and of course they didn't meet their own unrealistic pre-specified target, and then people interpreted it as a negative study, when in fact it was a very good signal.
Okay, great, thank you. That's very helpful. Do you believe that BAN2401 is equally effective in both APOE4 carriers and non-carriers?
I would say that it is probably the case. We always worry about selective risk around that. And oftentimes you see a selective effect in the APOE4, but I haven't seen them show data that showed selective effects of one group over another. Have you, Marty?
No, and I you have to be careful with that kind of statement too, because it may be that an agent or an antibody will have a more rapid effect, have a stronger binding or whatever in one APOE4 group or one subgroup than another, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's clinically more effective. I mean, if you give the relevant dose for that subgroup, it may be that clinical efficacy is, you know, the same, less, or better, you know, in the group where the effects are not as initially as strong.
Great, that's helpful. So we spoke earlier, I think one of you mentioned ongoing studies for crenezumab. I don't know if we talked about gantenerumab.
We did not talk about crenezumab.
Oh, okay. So there was data from gantenerumab, Scarlet Road, and Marguerite studies presented at AAIC, showing the correlation between amyloid reduction and clinical outcomes. Any feedback or comments on that data?
I think that Cren, to me, showed that they have very good safety signal, but clearly their efficacy signal is challenged. I mean, Cren is another one of the class to just not show a lot of effect. I have to tell you, I think there are consequences of that data, is that I worry that ATI number one could not show a positive signal, which would be devastating if that's the case. API, to the audience, is the Alzheimer's Prevention Initiative. This is the Columbia South America study of the autosomal dominant group, because I worry, you know, that it didn't show effect in phase 3, and they're using a subcutaneous formulation in the South American, and a negative result would be very, very poorly, would be tough to receive.
I would agree with that, but the caveat would be, I think, there would still be more hope for the South American population, as the mutation-associated diseases really are different. They exhibit a pathology that is very close to the same as sporadic Alzheimer's disease. But in terms of biomarkers, there is actually an overproduction of a beta amyloid associated with the mutation associated disease, whereas that is not the case for general sporadic Alzheimer's disease. Rather, it seems like it's more a failure of clearance.
Okay. And I think that study is the DIAN-2 study, is that correct?
That's a separate
study.
There is a DIAN-TU study. That was not a DIAN study. It's a separate study. Run out of Banner Institute.
Okay, got it. And then, did we talk about the A4 study in elderly patients at risk for Alzheimer's?
We did not.
Any comments on that study? Thoughts on what we should be looking for there or what to expect?
It's an ongoing trial, double-blind, placebo-controlled. One of the things that's encouraging is this is basically a primary prevention study, and remarkably high numbers of patients have tolerated and been willing to take the monthly infusions, so they have a very high, to date, they have a very high retention rate, which means when you get to the end of the trial, the data should be extremely interpretable, showing whether it has succeeded or not succeeded. You know, the worry in long-term trials like that is that dropouts may cloud the results, making it difficult to determine whether a drug has been successful or not. I think there are learnings in that study. The initial dose of solanezumab actually showed some positive effects that were used in this study in the large Lilly trials, but they were of modest magnitude. And understanding that and understanding binding and PK and PD from the aducanumab studies and other studies that showed greater clearance of amyloid, as it were, the dosages that are given of solanezumab in that trial have been successfully increased, and the increase has been associated with any large increase in adverse events. So there is a good chance that if the drug is going to work, it is being given at a more adequate dose to affect the target. The number of patients that are proceeding in this trial are going to be certainly large enough to get us a result. And I think it's a wait and see what we get a couple of years from now.
Okay, great. Well, we will look forward to that. I do want to let the listeners know that we will be opening the line to questions in a while. And if you have questions that you'd prefer for me to ask, please email them to me. My email address is jay.olson@opco.com. With that, I want to ask about Eli Lilly's N3pG A beta antibody, donanemab, which I know you spoke, I think Dr. Sabah, you spoke earlier about more toxic species of A beta. This antibody targets a pyroglutamate form of A beta. Any views on how this antibody may differentiate itself from previous antibodies?
It's a different target in the cascade, and so I feel like, you know, that's an innovative approach. I just, I'm not sure that novelty is strong enough to carry forward, but they felt scientifically it was enough, so that's why they moved it into phase two programs.
I'm the chair of the Data Safety Monitoring Board for that study, so I'm going to exit myself from this discussion.
Okay. Let's go back to BACE inhibitors for a moment. As I think both of you pointed out, several members of that class have failed. Merck's varibasestat, more recently Novartis, Amgen, umabasestat. I think there was data presented for both of these molecules at AAIC. And then, meanwhile, Eisai's elinbasestat is still in development. Any comments on the potential for this class and elinbasestat in particular?
Yeah, so Alan, based that is the last one left. There are speculations, and what I'm going to say now is speculative, based on an article that your audience should look at from Dennis Selko. He wrote a very, very nice review in Lancet Neurology just recently. The questions that have been facing the field all of a sudden is mechanistic ones. Is too much BACE inhibition not a good thing? So Alan Bechstadt apparently is a gentler or milder BACE inhibitor, and they feel some people think that that's why it's still showing no untoward toxic effects. I mean, the class so far has shown either making people worse cognitively, showing hippocampal shrinkage, or having hepatotoxicity. And this is the fifth, maybe sixth BACE inhibitor that has been looked at. So Alan Bechstadt is moving forward because it has a not as strong effect on the BACE inhibition, and their early data still shows positive effects. So we'll see.
Yeah, I would agree with that, and I think you know, the hypothesis that a lesser percentage of inhibition is a more modest push in the correct direction is, you know, it's a testable hypothesis, and I think we'll see. The question is, I think it's still open to debate whether anyone will try that agent or some of the other agents specifically targeting a lesser degree of inhibition, or whether they'll wait the results of those ongoing studies and make a judgment if there needs to be a more preclinical development and a greater understanding of what is going on mechanistically before this approach or some variation of this approach is used in large-scale clinical trials.
Okay, great. Thank you for that.
But
I will say that as far as I understand, ASI is still committed to moving this forward.
Yeah, to my knowledge, that's true. Absolutely.
I do want to make sure that we have time to get into some of the newer novel therapeutic approaches, and there are some specific drugs that we want to touch upon with you. Maybe we could start by talking about tau and the role that it plays in Alzheimer's. There are a number of drugs in development targeting tau. Any in particular that you're especially excited about? I know Eli Lilly and Biogen both have antibodies in phase 2 targeting tau. Any comments you could share with us there?
AbbVie, I think, to my eye, is really the strongest in class, and their phase 2 program is moving forward.
Well, I think that's right. Right now, they're the furthest along in terms of development. I think, you know, there are the antibody approaches. I think there are a number of small molecules that are being developed. I think they're kind of a step behind. I think a very exciting approach. There is an investigator, I'm sure he must have some industry association at WashU, that has actually begun using an interference RNA approach to knock down tau. And I believe from a biomarker standpoint, very, very successfully. And so at the current time, it's an incredibly expensive, difficult, but also, in terms of target engagement and results with a number of diseases that I never would have believed to be treated in this decade or the next, has been a very promising technology, and that with a rapidly developing potential to use some variation of CRISPR, I think are very exciting other approaches.
Okay, great. And then I also wanted to ask you about the role of microglia in Alzheimer's. Are you aware of any promising programs targeting microglia? For example, I think Denali has DNL747 targeting RIPK1.
I'm not familiar with that product. I thought that was for their ALS program.
I thought it was being studied for both ALS and Alzheimer's.
Okay.
I'm not aware it's been used clinically enough, but it certainly could be in early phase one. I'm not familiar either.
Okay. The project director is a new, was a guy who came out of UCSF, Richard Seitz. So I've just signed a confidentiality agreement to look at that further.
I will say there's considerable evidence in terms of the importance of microglia. There are, and different converging lines of evidence related to, illnesses in patients with Alzheimer's disease causing activation, delirium, et cetera, that in general would be supportive of that as a potentially useful hypothesis to drive future treatment studies.
Okay. Continuing to go through some additional data from AAIC, there was a presentation there on biostatin neurotrophic drugs. Could you talk about the mechanism there and your view on that phase two study?
So, Marty, I think you're on the DSO. You're an investigator for that, aren't you?
I am not.
Okay. So, briostatin has a very interesting mechanism of action around the synapses. And there, the previous phase two study that Dr. Farlow ran showed a very strong signal in moderate. And so, their data is among the more encouraging data I've seen coming out of phase two. And their mechanism of action is novel, so it's not a amyloid-focused approach. And the body of science is pretty strong around it.
There are actually a couple potential mechanisms of action. They have identified a subgroup in a previous phase 1-2 study, a moderate severe group, specifically patients who I can't remember now, were not on Memantine, I believe, was it, who benefited strongly. They have a confirmatory study that has been underway, and I believe they right now are at a stage where they may, in the next 2-4 months, presenting that data, and if it is confirmatory, then I think it would be very exciting because it would be a new, really different mechanism that might be very useful in our populations.
Excellent. Plus, Bob, when I add that, they're going, as far as I can tell, correct me if I'm wrong, Marty, they're really focused on a moderate population, which has been a population that's been an area of unmet need and a largely ignored population. So the fact that they have a good signal in that population is very encouraging.
Right. It's moderate to severe. I think, the field has been moving toward the even MCI or primary prevention. So very early stages of the disease, there are not that many studies. There's almost no studies currently of severe stage patients. So this is one of the few, and so I think we're looking forward to seeing that data, and hopefully it will show beneficial effects. But the proof is in the pudding.
Great, we will look forward to that. I just got a question.
question in from one of our listeners about the role of sigma R1 agonists as an upstream effect, and specifically a drug in development from Anavex. Any views you could share on that?
I don't know much about that drug. I do want to say that sigma R1 as a target has been shown to that drugs like donepezil can, and it does have positive effects in the brain. So I think that makes sense from a therapeutic standpoint, but I don't know much of the details.
I don't know anything further than what Marwan could say.
Okay. And again, I would encourage listeners with questions, please send them to me. You can email. We will open the line to questions in a few minutes. Can you talk about the role of insulin sensitivity in Alzheimer's drugs, and is it possible for diabetes drugs to have a benefit in Alzheimer's patients?
So I'll put my two cents in there. Clearly one of the findings that's been known for 25 or 30 years is there is some suggestion of difficulties with metabolism in the posterior parietal lobes, areas affected by Alzheimer's disease, but detectable by PET. Alan Rose's and others, looking at this data, and Suzanne Kraft in particular, Alan has described Alzheimer's disease as being diabetes of the brain, and a number of studies using diabetes drugs have been undertaken. Actually, nasal insulin was Suzanne Kraft has tried, and that study, I think, is sort of ongoing analysis of that, but the initial double-blind portion, I believe, was negative. One of the drugs I was involved with, DSMP, I was a chair of the DSMP, was rosiglitazone. That was a negative study. I think there is a large pioglitazone study, and there may be some differences. I'm peripherally aware of that data. Having said that, I think it is also there's kind of an understanding that rather than looking at it just as Alzheimer's disease, patients with mild cognitive impairment, there's a multifactorial etiologies. Obviously, diabetes is associated with strong vascular components. Also, there are other drugs that target antigens, some of the products that are associated with glucose metabolism, and I know there's going to be a trial that has started by a VTV that is targeting patients with Alzheimer's disease and diabetes, and I think this particular population, in terms of the mechanism of the action of the drug, is entirely logical. I know they looked very carefully at a previous study and had very strong evidence of beneficial effects in this group, but then again, we need to see what happens in the prospective trial that is just underway.
Great, and I think there was, an inhaled form, an inhaled form of insulin in development for Alzheimer's.
Yeah, so that's the one that Dr. Parlow was mentioning that Dr. Kraft ran, the nasal insulin study. I think from discussions with Dr. Kraft and looking at the data, the conclusion I have is it's inconclusive. They had divisive problems with drug delivery during the study, to the point where they had to stop the study, replace the device. And the interesting thing is when they went back and looked at it, it appeared that one device showed a benefit and the other device did not. So the prima facie readout is that it's a negative study, but in fact it might be largely dependent on the device. So I suspect they will answer that question with a new study. The clear interest in insulin is because it affects IDE, insulin degrading enzyme, which also cleaves amyloid. So there's a dual reason to look at this as a target, and I think the insulin story has not been conclusively settled. You know, pioglitazone was looked at in the Tomorrow study. That was met futility. I think that the therapeutically, the glitazones, which are PPAR gamma agonists, have been shown to be mostly negative. You know, there's the Passanetti study looking at metformin, which is going on in New York City. So I think that one's still moving forward. I think the metabolic approaches it still has some interest.
You know what I would say to me, there is a broad population of middle-aged elderly patients in the United States that are somewhat over ideal body weight, who have insulin resistance, and at some point develop mild cognitive impairment. And the etiology of that can be somewhat mixed, or, you know, more than one thing going on, and be it related to mechanisms of the diabetes or vascular or Alzheimer's or a mix of all of those. It's a very large population, and it's a worthy target.
Okay, great. At this point, Stephanie, could you please poll for questions?
Sure. As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, you may press star followed by the number 1 on your telephone keypad.
And let me advise, I have exactly 4 minutes, and then I have to go to a large international DSMB.
Okay. Let's, while we're waiting for questions, let's move on to inflammation. Any thing that you've seen, some controversy around anti-TNF molecules and potential benefits they may have in Alzheimer's patients. Any work that you're aware of that was presented or discussed at AAIC?
My group at Cleveland Clinic is doing a trial of lenalidomide, the Celgene Revlimid drug, because it's a TNF-alpha and base modulator. That one is starting now. But that's investigator initiated. That's not industry initiated.
Okay.
And I know that etanercept got a lot of controversy, but you know, we in the field didn't feel like the controversy was warranted, because it people beat up Pfizer for suppressing data. But I don't know. I thought that it was too controversial at the time to move forward with it anyway. So.
Okay.
I think it's a plausible mechanism. I think there's data with regard to another degenerative disease in ALS that actually looked surprisingly good, amazingly good. But that's from a couple of years ago, and I haven't seen anything further from that.
Okay. Let's go on to some other mechanisms here. What about infectious disease, specifically either prions or I think there's another hypothesis that targeting a protease created by gingivitis bacteria may work, and there's a drug in development by Cortexime. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah. I'm an advisor to that company.
I am also.
Okay. All right, let's skip that one. Let's see. Other questions are coming in now through email.
I would say, there are other hypotheses with regard to infection. That's kind of been on the outside, but I think people are paying attention with regard to the prion type approach. I mean, people talk about actually the spread of tau as having some features. You know, the way it spreads is similar to how prions spread through the central nervous system. And so there's interest in, you know, targeting drugs, antibodies, other molecules that specifically would prevent that prion-like spread through the central nervous system.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you for that. I got a question here about a promised neuroscience antibody which targets toxic oligomers. Are you familiar with that drug? And I think they had some data presented at AAIC.
I'm not familiar with that.
Not familiar.
Okay. All right. Maybe moving on to Alector with a study in frontotemporal dementia. Their molecule AL001. Any thoughts on that?
I met with Alector just now, and I know that they are. I don't know that they've actually entered into clinical trial. That they were just filing their IND was my conversation. Unless they have already got their.
That was my understanding also, and I apologize, but I must drop off right now.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Farlow. We appreciate you joining us. We will continue on for a few more minutes with Dr. Saban. We really appreciate you joining us today, Dr. Farlow.
Very good. Thank you. Bye.
Let's see. Another question coming in. I think this is a follow-up on briostatin. Are there any data showing that briostatin plays a role in inflammation, amyloid lowering, or hyperphosphorylation of tau?
I will say to you, my understanding is it's mostly directed to the synapse. I don't know if they have other effects on inflammation.
Okay, great. I just want to check with Stephanie really quick. Stephanie, any questions coming in online on the phone?
Yes, we do have a question from Jeffrey Benison.
Okay, please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. In the prior phase 2 trial, briostatin showed a 6-point increase over baseline and a 8-point increase over the placebo group in the non-memantine patients. And that was actually an increase in the SIB. And I was wondering if you'd seen anything like that in a in any other studies in recent years.
I've not. That's what makes me engaged in understanding it, because that's the best effect I've seen in moderate stage heart stop in any drug, any class.
The thing that impressed me a lot about that also was that it was not just an overall group, but 15 out of the 16 patients actually had an improvement. And so it wasn't like there were just two or three outliers that showed a very large improvement. So I was wondering if you had actually gone in and looked at that to actually see the patient improvements on the individual patient data.
I was not an investigator for that study, so I didn't get to see the actual data. But, you know, it is an encouraging signal. And, you know, the fact is that memantine, most of these patients are on memantine, so in that, at least moderate. So the fact that they could get patients in moderate, not on memantine, was very useful, because they feel like that could mechanistically overlap. But I didn't see the actual data. All I have is what you have.
Okay. All right. And the cortisone drug, that theory looks very interesting.
Yeah.
What I was impressed about on that that company's trial or that company's mechanism is that they actually took regular mice, and by giving them the bacteria, they were actually caused plaques in the mice brains, which I don't know if that's, has anybody, except for the transgenic mice, has anybody ever developed plaques in a rodent model?
No, not that I know of. So the interesting thing is the bacteria is P. gingivalis, and it's a gingipain inhibitor. And the idea is that this protein, gingipain, is a neurotoxin, and that inhibiting it could have a beneficial effects. What I like about the Cortexin approach is very innovative, and their phase one data looks very good. Target is good. No, it's a new class of drug, so it's very hard to speculate on it. But so far, their data looks very, very positive. Because nobody, and their data shows that people who have high levels of P. gingivalis or gingipain actually have a more rapid decline. That's unrelated to the treatment. That's just that higher amounts of the bacteria and the bacterial protein load is associated with a more rapid decline, which is a very, very interesting idea. Conceptually, is why I think it makes sense.
Yeah, the mechanism looks very interesting to me. The only thing that I'm cautious about is that they go from a 9-patient phase one into a 575-patient phase three. I would prefer to do a smaller study and get more information. Maybe they would see, something that would make the design of a phase three study better than to go right into phase three. That's the only issue I have with them.
Well, I think that, a lot of these small to mid-sized companies swing for the fences because they don't have an unlimited budget.
Right. Well, thank you very much.
Okay. It's the top of the hour, Jay?
Yes, I think that brings us to a conclusion here. Thank you so much, Dr. Sabah. I really appreciate your joining us today and close proximity to AAIC, and thank you for sharing your insights with us.
It's my pleasure.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. That does conclude today's conference call. You may now disconnect.
Do you want to listen to another Encore conference? Press 1 for yes or 2 for no. Press 1 for yes or 2 for no. Press 1 for yes or 2 for no. Goodbye.
Mm-hmm.